This is Harry Murray at Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia, with our fourth podcast on smallmouth bass. I'm reporting this on May the 14th, but the tactics I'm going to give you here are applicable throughout the stream. We'll follow up more on this. We're probably doing a total of about 12 or 14 podcasts all through the season. But what I'm talking about today is reading a smallmouth river. This may be the most important of all the podcasts, because what I'm doing is setting up a pool like you see a picture here on our website with, and I'm going to fish this from the right-hand side going downstream in the head of the pool, going downstream all the way to the tail of the pool. Now, when we're having our classes here throughout the summer on the smallmouth rivers, the fellows that can get a handle on this are those that do well in all of their smallmouth fishing, no matter what river they're fishing. The basic thing that I'm trying to teach in this is how to present your fly to the fish in a realistic way that will convince them it's a real thing. So the first thing you're asking yourself here is, where do I think the bass are going to be? Once you evaluate that, then you're going to say, well, if the bass are where I suspect they're going to be, where am I going to put my fly? Only then do you know where to put yourself. So where are the bass? Where do I put my fly? And where do I put myself? All right, let's start up at the head of the pool is number A when you're looking at it. Now, this is a small, shallow riffle. This water probably is running 2 to 3 feet deep, but it's loaded with sculpin minnows, little mad toms, that kind of thing. This is very, very easy water to fish down and across at about a 20-degree angle with a streamer. You're going to cast your streamer down and across stream, strip it back about 6 inches every 5 seconds. Now, if you haven't done much streamer fishing, a very important part of this is to have your rod tip pointed where the line is coming out of the water all the way down the whole cast so you can strip that right back in a realistic manner. Now, the B on that picture you're looking at is what I call a deep riffle. Now, this is actually a continuation of the riffle above, but here the water may get 3 to 4 feet deep. Now, the larger bass will often hold in this water. They're going to feed on the mad toms in here, the sculpins in here. The Murray mad tom is an excellent pattern to use. Some chub minnows in through here too. An Ed Shanks white streamer is excellent here, as is the Murray's chub. But you're also going to be using the down and across technique, as we mentioned up above, and this is excellent water. Now, this is also the water where we found a lot of the natural helgramites. Remember we mentioned those? This is actually the larva of the adult Dobson fly. All right, if you want to fish these up dead drift, you're going to wade out into the water, casting straight upstream or up and across at maybe a 10-degree angle. You're going to let your helgramite, now I especially like the Murray's helgramite, but you're going to let your helgramite drift back down naturally, watching the indicators on your leader. Now, I like a 9-foot 2X bright butt leader. I put one SA indicator up in the butt and one in the next strand down, and I'm watching these like a kid watches a bobber on a cane pole. And you can fish that right up through those riffles and take lots and lots of bass on these natural helgramites. They are in there feeding on the naturals, and our pattern does act and fish like the real thing. Now, immediately below that fast riffle, the deep riffle, is on the far side of the bank, there's a back eddy. Now, these eddies will be anywhere from the size of a card table to, maybe twice as big as an SUV. A lot of bass cruise in and out of those areas, especially at dusk. Minnows will get trapped back in there. Maybe a minnow whose home was up in the faster riffle. He's dying. He's struggling. He is washed over in those back eddies. And those bass move in there and gobble, gobble. Now, we use the Murray's chub back in there. A lot of times in the low light level, we'll go with the gray Shenandoah chugger, because that looks a lot like some of those minnows. And but I cover the whole area. Now, in the back eddy, if I'm wading out into it, as you see that angler in there doing, I'm going to fish the outer part first, the deeper part out toward the main part of the stream, and then move over and cover the whole thing in an back eddy, we'll say 20 feet in diameter. I'll probably use a dozen casts to cover that. Some of the biggest bass I've ever caught have been in these kind of areas. Don't want to get too close to them and spook them, so be willing to punch out a pretty good sized cast on that. Now, immediately below that back eddy is a grass bed. Now, the grass beds are my favorite areas to fish in any smallmouth rivers. There's a place on the Potomac that I wade all the way across the Potomac to get some good grass beds on one side. When Jeff and I were running around through the state of Virginia covering the James, New Clinch, Rappahannock, and all that for the book I was writing, Virginia's Blue Ribbon Streams, no matter which smallmouth river we were on, the grass beds were almost always the most productive area. Now, these are clean grass beds back against the bank that would be ranging from 2 to 4 feet deep. Now, in water that depth, you can either go up on the top and cover them with a popping bug. There are a lot of damselflies back in there, so the Shenandoah damsel is an excellent pattern to use there. Fish it right up against the grass. Now, if that water is running 3 to 5 feet deep along there, you're probably going to do better with a silver outcast streamer that mimics those shiners or the Murray shiner. Murray shiner being a little heavier, it'll reach down in those depths better. But the grass beds, I will never ever pass up a grass bed. They're just so dependable. I've always wanted to devote a fair amount of time to them. Now, as that grass bed tapers out downstream, we come into the gravel bars. Chub minnows galore live on these gravel bars in water 2 to 4 feet deep. The chub minnows live right back on the edges of them in schools. Now, when you see one shiner minnow, you're going to see lots of shiner minnows, and the bass will roam right along the edges. Big rivers like the James, the New that you're floating, when you see these gravel bars back along the side, run your boat down maybe 50 feet out from them, cast back out onto the gravel bar, and then strip your streamer right back out, because often the bass will cruise right along the edges of these gravel bars. Now, if you see a chase going on, that's when the bass leave the depths that they're in, go back on those gravel bars, and chase the shiner minnows back there. No matter what fly you have on, the instant you see a chase, if he's within casting distance, shove your fly back in front of him and bring it to life right away. These guys back in there are spooky when they're on that shallow water. If they're back on that gravel bar that's, say, 2 feet deep, they're in there strictly to feed, so shove a long cast back there, put it right in front of them, and bring it to life. But if you see them back in there chasing minnows, you won't see the bass often, but you'll see the minnows fleeing. So what I like to do is cast about 3 feet out in front of the school of minnows, 3 feet on the other side, and I bring my fly to life just as quickly as I can coming through there. But early in the year, almost all of the shiner minnows will be on those gravel bars. Now, once the grass gets going, which would be the middle of the summer, it's about 50-50. But don't ever pass up the gravel bars, especially where they taper off into the deeper water. I had a lady in a school several years ago, and she could really never get a hang of making long casts. Now, what I did was bring her down the dry bank in behind one of those gravel bars and had her cast out across the gravel bar into the deeper water right beside it, and she caught one of the biggest bass anybody's ever caught in one of our schools. She was using a silver outcast streamer that particular day. Now, immediately below that gravel bar I'm talking about, which is may reach out in the water maybe 30, 40, 50 feet deep, but immediately below that, in many spots in the river, you'll have those real deep pools. Now, the deep pools in mid-river are home for sculpin minnows, they're home for especially for mad toms, and they're home for the dragonflies. So what we do is fish that down and across using a streamer that would mimic the mad tom, the Murray's mad tom, or you could use a dragonfly nymph, and just slowly crawl that across the bottom of that deep water. Cover all of that, and if the water is, say, if it's running 4 to 6 feet deep and with a fairly good pace, you may want to go to a sinking tip line here. I like the Scientific Angler Mastery sink tip line on my 7-weight to cover this. That'll sink at about 2 to 4 inches per second, and that'll let me cover that pretty effectively. But mid-pool is definitely going to hold some of the big fish. Now, immediately below the mid-pool on the far side, you'll see a log that's washed in there. Logs are hot spots for smallmouth bass. if the water back under that log that's lying in the river is running 2 to 3 feet deep, I'll almost always cover that with a popper. I especially like the Shenandoah Blue Popper. It's a sort of a general searching pattern, but that's a very effective pattern. And I'll cover that down and across and make sure anybody lying under any part of that log is going to see my popper worked over the top of it. Now, if the water back under that log is going to be, we'll say, 4 or 5, maybe even 6 feet deep, then that's when I go to the streamers. I'll go to some kind of heavy streamer and let me work it back underneath there. Shank's White Streamer has been excellent for me in situations like that. But cover every inch of a downfall, partly because not only does it give the food that they need, it gives the protection that they need, but the shadow that it casts is so important for the big bass. Bright sunlight is a killer on trying to catch some big bass, but the big bass can hold back under those downfalls and just get, they can feed on anything coming down the tube for them. Now, the tail of the pool, where it leaves the pool that we're presently fishing and tapers on out to go on downstream to form the next pool, the tails of the pools are very, very valuable, especially in the latter part of the summer. From July all the way through to, we'll say, middle of October, early October maybe, the tails of the pools last year were fantastic. They were so good, in fact, that what I did last year, I'd wade into the riffle downstream of the tail of this pool, down below, what you're looking at right there. I'd turn and come back up and fan my cast across the tails of those pools. Now, we're talking about a tail of the pool here, the water width maybe, 3 to 4 feet deep. Where it would meet the mid-pool area up above, it might taper off into something 5 feet deep. But the tails of the pools, especially in a low light level, and once the sun gets off the water, they were hot as a firecracker last year. I caught more big fish in the tails of the pools late in the evening last year than any part of the pool I fished. Try to hang around until dark. You can fish these upstream, kind of fanning your cast back and forth across there with the Shenandoah Blue Popper is good. The Chugger is good up in there. But if you want to fish some deeper water, go to Shank's White Streamer, the Murray's Mad Tom. Lots of kids seine and catch Mad Toms back in the tails of those pools. So the Murray Mad Tom fished upstream, stripping it back just a wee bit faster than the current itself. So the tails of pools are very, very valuable once the bright sunlight gets off the water. Now, that pretty well covers what I wanted to tell you on reading a smallmouth river. Now, we're going to go on in the future weeks and cover different tactics and how you fish your way through the season. And remember now, I'm gearing all this to what I do here in the Mid-Atlantic area and especially in the Shenandoah River. So if you have any questions on any of this, just call me at 540-984-4212. Harry Murray at Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia. Thank you very much.